Well, Jesus' most famous sermon, the Sermon on the Mount, is where we are camping out these days, and we're going to continue to have discussion around that. And Jesus is reminding everyone in this sermon that our inner world, what people see, is actually more important than maybe our outer world, what everybody else, I think I said that wrong. Our inner world, the people that don't see, is important or more important than our outer world, which people do see. That's what he's trying to say. Because behavior flows from our hearts, from the inside. And the heart is what Jesus is focused on. And if we allow him and spend time with him and cooperate with him to change our hearts, guess what? Pressure's off. We don't have to be so worried about the outside. Because we're allowing Jesus to do the changing on the inside, and the outside will take care of itself. We're diving into these six antitheses that where Jesus says, "You've heard it said," and then he says, "But I say unto you." He'll quote Old Testament, then he takes it up a notch. And a few verses before he kicks these off, we read this a few weeks back, Matthew 5:20. He said, "I say to you, unless your righteousness is greater than the righteousness of the legal experts and the Pharisees, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven." Jesus is saying this life that I'm inviting you into is not about keeping the rules. He's saying the vision I have for your life is so much better than rule following. Thank the Lord. Rule following is hard. Allowing Jesus to transform your heart isn't necessarily super easy, but it's way more fulfilling, way more rewarding, and a way better way to live and be a human in our life. And then last week we dove into Matthew 5:23-26. That said, "Therefore, if you bring your gift to the altar there and remember that your brother or sister has something against you, leave your gift at the altar and go. First make things right with your brother and sister and then come back and offer your gift." Yes, Jesus is saying, go, leave. Leave your gift here, go make things right, then come back. And then he says, "Be sure to make friends quickly with your opponents while you're on your way to the court. Otherwise, they will haul you off before the judge, and the judge will turn you over to the officer of the court, and you'll be thrown into prison. And I say to you, in all seriousness, that you won't get out of there until you have paid the very last penny." He's saying, it's not about the judge. Don't let the court decide. He's saying, reconcile on the way. This is about relationship. Jesus is making a big statement about how important relationships are with other people. He's saying that it's just as important as worship. He's saying this idea, we know now that God is with us. He's everywhere. But in this time, he's kind of saying, hey, this vertical thing of worship that you're doing, man, it's connected to the horizontal. Let's fix our relationships because the way all this works, it works together. And there's good news in that. Last week, I proclaimed this good news. Reconciliation seems unrealistic and sometimes impossible, but must radically be pursued by me, by you. And our humility with God and openness to his spirit will result in mutual submission to each other. Then we will enjoy life in the freedom of God's love and offer the same to others. Man, that's good news. The priority is relationship. It's always been about relationship. And because of the good news of Jesus, we are now restored fully, relationally, back to God. He's always with us. Nothing we can do can separate that. But last week I also reminded it's not just about a holy me and about me being connected to God. It's about a holy we, right? Us together. Our relationships to God are also connected, a direct connection to our relationships to other people. And that's what righteousness is. It's a covenant relationship, right relatedness. That when I make this covenant to God, I'm saying, I'm going to love you, God, with all my heart, all my soul, all my mind, and my strength. And I'm going to love my neighbor as I love myself. But it always comes down to, what do I want more? Whatever the selfishness going on inside of me, or do I want reconciliation, or do I want to say yes to whatever it is that Jesus is calling me into, this life that he's calling? Then we open it up to you guys. Question of the day. And we let you guys submit questions. And now we're going to dive into some of those questions. So, Greg, our executive pastor, if you want to go ahead and come on up. And we're going to turn this over to you.
Really enjoyed his message last week, and such an important. And I'm really looking forward to digging into that a little bit more this morning. So a couple weeks ago, we had a panel conversation about questions that you guys had asked about Brian's message. And we heard back from you, and several of you said that you really enjoyed to hear Jesus' teaching about those questions, and that it really helped you with real life stuff. So we thought we'd give it another go this morning. And of course, we're not going to do this after every message during this series. Thank goodness. But we thought, let's slow the train down a little bit this morning and really see what Jesus has to say about reconciliation, what it looks like to become human again. So guys, if you guys would, come on up. And we're going to dig into some frequently asked questions, and we're going to answer the questions that you guys had last weekend. So hello, everybody. Good morning. So let's jump right in once we play musical chairs here a little bit, a little awkward moment, but that's good. That's good. So how does personality differences affect conflict? How does personality difference affect conflict? And Brian, would you share a little bit about that?
It is a really good question. We all know that we see life through different lenses based on whatever we're bringing to the parents, right? So we have different families we grew up in that did things in different ways. We have different experiences in life, maybe different educational backgrounds. We've worked different jobs, and we have different personalities. And those personalities have a big impact on how we engage with each other. If I can only see the world through my eyes, I can't ever see the world through your eyes. Man, that is a recipe for disaster. Amen? Mm-hmm. And if I think my way is always the right way, and anybody else's way is always the wrong way, we'll never get to what we talked about a couple of weeks ago, where we meet in the middle somehow and figure out how to do life together in a better way. So I think personality is a really big component of all of that. We have a tool that we use in our 10 practices called the Enneagram. We've got a group going on right now where they're working on that. And the Enneagram takes a particular look at personality through our motivations. What drives my heart? What drives your heart? And whenever I can begin to understand that about me and I can understand that about you, it opens up so much opportunity. Sometimes we judge somebody else through our own story. So whatever I believe about you is either untrue, mm-hmm. or it's at best incomplete. If I don't know your story, I just look at you like you're somebody else living my story. And that's
true.
Not how this life works at all. I was thinking about an example of people who are probably like me, real animated, sort of loud people, you know? There are other people who grew up in real quiet environments, you know, who their family's always quiet, everything quiet, and then people like me show up and like, hands everywhere, and talking really loud.
That's why I moved out of the way. I knew what was going to happen.
And that can sometimes feel really, it can feel intimidating if you grew up in a quiet, everybody's sort of controlled, no bodily expressions or whatever. And I may just think, I'm just energetic and passionate and excited, you know? Well, this is normal. And you may go, you're really aggressive. Like, you fight a lot? One's not right, the other one wrong. We're just different. Here's what happens in relationships. Relationships are how we come together, and we bring our differences to the table and figure out how to make them work for us instead of against us. I'm going to say that again. Relationships require us to bring our differences to the table and make them work for us, mm-hmm. instead of against us. And we need each other. Like, without you, my vision's myopic. I cannot see all of reality without you.
Yeah.
And you can't see all of reality without me. And once we can get humble enough to admit that, Jeremiah used that in his good news last week about the humility and mutual submission. When we can come at it that way, friends, man, what I discover is we make each other more. You don't make me less. Amen?
Yeah.
That's a big deal. Yeah. It can help a lot, I think, with that.
That's good.
Our personalities do this.
Right, right.
Good question.
We normally think about pursuing reconciliation when somebody has wronged us. But Jesus teaches to pursue reconciliation when somebody thinks we have wronged them. What's the difference there, Leslie? Why is that?
Yeah, I think we just have to start by remembering what Jesus is doing in the Sermon on the Mount. He's just describing what it would look like for us to become human again. And as Jeremiah pointed out last week and again this morning, our right relatedness to God is connected to our right relatedness to others. And what Jesus is doing here is he's limiting our responsibility to the part we actually have some power over. We can't control what the other person's doing, but we do have power over how we interact with them. So if there's even a possibility that we may be the wrongdoer in a situation, then our job as followers of Jesus is to resist that natural temptation to get defensive or to try to explain our behavior or, you know, justify what we did or whatever, and to humbly approach the other person and to see the value in them and try to see things from their side and make right what may have been wrong, right? And it's possible in those situations that the other person won't want reconciliation. You can't choose that for them. Or maybe they want reconciliation, but they're hurt, they're scared to approach us. And so when we see that reconciliation between humans is this important to God, that Jesus makes such strong statements on it, then our job is to be willing to set aside the stuff that comes between us and to actually take the initiative to approach the other person, even if they don't want that. So we do our part, and then we let them choose what they're going to do with their part of it. But if there's even a possibility that I may be the one who's responsible for the wrong, then I'm responsible to try to right that.
Yeah, that's good. On the flip side of that, someone asked if you've been hurt, how to reconcile with someone that has hurt you and you're having trouble to forgive them. And I think we'll hit that on two or three different levels this morning. The first one, can we reconcile with someone without trusting them? Can you truly reconcile with somebody that you haven't fully trusted that relationship yet?
That's the hard question.
Why don't you answer that one then, Jay?
The thing with trust, here's the big thing with trust. Trust is built over time, not overnight.
Yeah.
You know that, right? Sure. And a lot of times when we think of reconciliation or forgiveness or anything like that, we think that always just has to accompany right off the bat. Like, I got to trust them immediately. But both parties, one person can't build trust for two people, right? It takes two people to do that. So keeping with Jesus' teaching here, what he's saying is what we're responsible to do is how we see the other person. So I'm not just talking about trust. It's about how we see that person. Yeah. And it's about, am I seeing them out of love or am I seeing them out of judgment? Yeah. So it's a really clear difference between just do I trust them? How do I see them? What's my approach? Is it love or is it judgment? And we can't close the gap to rebuild that trust with somebody else if they won't participate. So rebuilding trust takes a long time, and it also takes cooperation with two people. They might have to own on their part. So we're talking about somebody's hurt us, and they might have to actually own that, like where they've hurt us in that situation, so that we can actually move forward and change. And if they refuse to respond to that, which is kind of part of this question, but it's another question that we get often asked, is if they refuse to respond to any reconciliation, and you've done, like what Leslie's saying, you've done your part, you've tried to own that, trying to rebuild trust, you can pull back from that. Like, you can set some healthy boundaries, because if you're constantly trying to pursue reconciliation and this person's not, what's going to happen is you're going to continue to get hurt over and over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. And that's not what we're talking about we should do. It's not just fully trusting that and all that to be on you. Eventually, you get to set some boundaries. Another thing to keep in mind here is we don't get to tell someone how hurt they are. Doesn't that feel weird when somebody just tells you how hurt you should be about something? You don't get to tell them how hurt they are as well. You're both in this together, and the wound could go deep in different ways for different people. Yeah. So you might just have to slow down in that.
Yeah.
Go as fast as you can, maybe as slow as you need to, but you don't get to actually be the one to come in and cast judgment on how far someone else is hurt in that situation. You have to understand there's two different things. And we're not responsible to make it go away.
Yeah.
Okay? So that's the way that I think we feel. Like last week, I know I left that hanging a little bit. Like, go reconcile. Go do it. I did it with my friend. Why don't you guys go do it? We know that was leaving that hanging for a reason. But we also know that we can't always make it right. And we feel always responsible to do that. However, what our responsibility is to want to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We have to want to do it. So the answer more clearly, no, reconciliation probably won't happen if there's not a desire from both parties to do so, to rebuild trust. However long that might take.
But, yeah, that's good. But what if the person that has hurt us doesn't know if they hurt us? So if, you know, they might have hurt us and they don't know they did. If we bring that back to them, isn't that going to hurt them in return? You know, what do we do? Do we just be quiet about it? Do we go and talk to them about it? How do we handle that, Brian?
Yeah. Let me do this. Because that's a really great question. And I was so, when I saw that somebody asked that question, first of all, whoever you are, I commend you for the compassion that you feel for somebody else's hurt in the situation, not just your own, right? To say, man, I also don't want to hurt them unnecessarily if it's not going to help. That's a great impulse, right? That sounds like Jesus to me. So kudos to you. I think maybe one of the challenges we have is understanding the difference between forgiveness and reconciliation. And we're hitting on a lot of both of those, actually, as we're answering your questions. And a lot of your questions hit on both of those as well. So let's just pause for a second and be sure we're totally clear on the difference between the two, because they often get confused. Forgiveness takes one person, you. Reconciliation takes two people, okay? Forgiveness is you saying, I see what you did, I don't like what you did, I'm not gonna put myself in a position for you to do that to me again or to this other person. But I also relinquish my right to get revenge. I am going to let it go. And I'm going to forgive you, just like Christ has forgiven me. This is forgiveness. Mm-hmm. Reconciliation is two people who are saying, we see where our relationship is right now, and we don't like that, and we'd like to rebuild that, and we're going to see if we can find some way that we might be able to get on the same page again. So I think to the question, it's a lot about which one of those is it that you're concerned about. If you're looking at a broken relationship and you're afraid if I bring something up, it's going to hurt the other person, I really do believe step one is to say, what is the thing I'm feeling pulled toward? Forgiveness or reconciliation? Is this something I could just take care of in my own heart toward them? I don't need to hurt them to take care of it. See what I'm saying? Or is it affecting our relationship such that it's going to have to come up if we're going to have any relationship again? And I'm going to have to bring it up to them, aren't I? And so if you know the risk to the other person is real, take that seriously. In fact, I think just to be real practical, I would say, if you're struggling to figure that out, we practice what we call discernment. And sometimes you got to get somebody else to process with you and help you discern what's really going on inside my heart and what kind of an action would that require. And so hopefully you have a trusted friend, a counselor, one of our pastors, somebody who can help you process that and say, which one is it, forgiveness or reconciliation? And it may help you decide whether the hurt that may happen to the person you love is necessary or worth it.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. One more thought on this question. If we have an unreconciled relationship, is that going to affect my other relationships, Leslie?
Yeah, I mean, that's a real risk, right? I think we've all seen that happen before. Because the hurts that we hold on to, they turn into baggage. And we carry that baggage with us in every relationship we are in. And often it shows up in ways like, you know, someone broke my trust, so I've decided I am not going to trust someone again. Or I'm going to make everyone in my life prove their love and loyalty because somebody abused mine. Or maybe we struggle to be vulnerable with anybody because we've done that before and we got hurt in some way. And then we find that all of our relationships struggle to have any depth or really flourish because relationships require some vulnerability to really thrive. But here's the thing. Like, we can't fully keep the past from influencing the present. And some of that is an opportunity to learn. But the past doesn't have to define our present. It doesn't have to define every relationship we're ever in again. In fact, I think if we want to become human, we have to deal with the past. We have to be willing to enter a discernment process, maybe with other people. We have to process these hurts in light of God's love for us and for the other person. Because if we don't do that, then our past does end up defining our present.
Yes.
I think it would be helpful, probably, if we give some examples of this, though. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering, do any of you guys have examples of how this has played out in your own lives?
Yeah. Yeah, I'll go first.
Thanks, Greg.
I know you guys are all jumping at it. But, it is so hard. It's so hard. I know Reagan and I, we've tried to reconcile with some family members. And it didn't end with the happy ending that you had last weekend, Jeremiah, that you shared with us, that, you know, we reconciled and we're all closer together. And it's a deep hurt. Man, it's a deep hurt, you know. And to be honest with you, it makes you gun shy, if you will, to put yourself vulnerable and to do it again. So it doesn't always end with a happy ending, you know, and it is hard. It's hard.
I have a situation that immediately comes to my mind. I bet everybody in here has one, and multiples. But this one in particular, I'm thinking about a dear friend for many years, and something happened in our relationship, and I did everything I knew. In fact, last week when you were preaching, Jeremiah, I sat down in the front row, and I had to go back through that at the reflection at the end when we were responding. Got a little emotional, actually. I was just like, God, have I really? Really, because it's been years now. You know, yeah. Did I do everything I was supposed to do? Is there something left I should do about this today? And I ended up getting real peace about that, but it was probably one of the hardest things in my life. And I think my impulse then was to say, I will never love somebody enough to get hurt this badly again.
Mm-hmm.
It was self-protection.
Yeah.
You know, it was not just gunshot. It was really me just saying, I got to protect my heart because this hurts way too bad. Anybody been there?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I remember making a conscious choice. Thank God for the Holy Spirit and people you know, who help. I remember making a conscious choice. I don't want to become that kind of human. I don't want to become the kind of human who limits the people I love or limits how much of my heart I give away. I don't want to become that kind of, I don't want to be that kind of old man when I die, you know, self-protected and so forth. And so I think sometimes it's frustrating as somebody asks us, what happens when the other person won't join in, because it does take two. Man, I think that's where we have to really rely on the fact that we can't choose for them what they won't choose for themselves. But I can choose not to live in a gun-shy, self-protected way that says that hurt, and there are going to be a lot of them in our lives, that hurt now is going to define, as Leslie's talking about, every future relationship I have will never benefit from the full me because somebody took advantage of that, you know? And for me, that's kind of been my way to respond to that.
Yeah, it's good.
Thanks for sharing those, guys. Yeah. I think it's obvious, you know, probably everybody, like he said, has a situation that comes to mind in these. I know I do. And it's easy to see how there are those ripple effects in the rest of our lives. And I think Jesus knows that. Jesus' words in the sermon are so incredibly practical to our lives. And I think he knows how much is at stake in us reconciling with others. Not just for us, but for them, and for all of us to actually fully experience the power of God's love. And I think it's a reflection of what a good God that he is, that he cares so much for us, that he wants us to experience that kind of love. And that means getting practical, and that means processing some hard things and pursuing reconciliation to radical lengths. And that's what he's trying to get done in this sermon, I think.
Yeah, that's good. That's really good. Somebody asked, what about if the person that you're going to reconcile with has died, or for whatever reason you can't get a hold of them? I mean, how do you heal from that, Jay? What do you do?
And these are good questions.
Yeah.
You guys are good question answers, askers.
You're the answer. They're the asker.
Yeah. Yeah. Anybody else want to answer this one? But man, these are good questions. And this question, I just want to say, sounds like a lot of bad news. And there is a lot of good news, I think, in this answer that we're going to give here. So the first thing I want to say is don't give up hope. So I said last week, sometimes it seems unrealistic. In a situation like this where somebody dies or you have no contact with them, all of a sudden that feels hopeless, not helpless. And I want to say don't give up hope. You're not hopeless. You might feel a little helpless in that situation. And remember that this is a truth that I have to tell myself often. We say God cares about it more than we do. So when it comes to reconciliation and the pain that you're dealing with or that somebody else is dealing with, he wants that reconciled more than you do. Yeah. And sometimes the hurt is so deep, he hurts that way. He loves that way, and he cares about it just as much as you do. The lack of participation may mean that you might have to do some extra steps. So if there's nobody else on the receiving end, you might have to do some extra things rather than just being able to go to talk to them because you can't do that. And one of the things that we recommend in a situation like this would be see a counselor. We have recommended counselors. Mm-hmm. I just can't tell you how much help that can be in a situation to be able to unpack some unresolved hurt and reconciliation that you might need. In a situation where you don't have anybody else to talk to or to feel some sort of relief on that. So that could be a really great step for you to be able to do that. Another possibility, this is something that the Greg Boyd, this is the way he talks about this, is imagine how beautiful life may be someday when everything has been restored or reconciled. Isn't that a great thing to think about? You can just think about it. Imagine that. One thing I went to say before that is a letter. I've recommended people do this a lot. Write a letter. Write it all down. Put it down in words. You may not be able to mail it to them because you may not know where they are. They may have passed on. But there is something significant about being able to write those words, to transcend what's going on in your heart and mind down into something tangible, because part of the problem is that's what we're having trouble doing. We don't get to relieve it with somebody else, but when you take what's going on in your heart and mind and put it on something tangible that you can see, there's something that can take place that could be really, really renewing for you in that way. So if you're thinking, well, that sounds silly, I don't know if I want to try that, try that. Yeah. It really could work. It could be helpful. Yeah. And then this idea that Greg talks about, imagining how beautiful life will be someday when everything is restored or reconciled. Yeah. That's what God's promised anyway, right? Yeah. That through him, all things will be made new. Everything will be reconciled to himself. Amen. And this is why I say this is some really, really good news in here. Yes. Meditating on this idea that someday there will be no brokenness, no wrongs, yes. no hurt, yes. no pain, and we're getting a glimpse of that now. So when we're talking about the reconciliation and when we're living out this life in this way to become human again, just imagine and sit and meditate on how things will be someday. And I'm telling you, when you begin to retrain your mind on the truth of what is versus what just might seem hopeless, it will do something for you in your spirit and soul to just stop focusing on what I can't do right now and start remembering what the truth is about Jesus and his coming kingdom that's here now and not yet someday. That's really good news.
That is good news. So guys, is it realistic for Jesus to think that we can really pull all this stuff off? I mean, he's setting the bar pretty high here, right? Yeah. I mean, is it?
I think I'll take that one because Jeremiah just teed it up for me. Jesus, don't forget, is truly describing a different way of living life than most humans live it, than most of us live it. He's giving us a vision. He's saying, this is what it could look like. This is, there's this future version of the kingdom when God's will be done on earth as it is in heaven, but there's the present reality of that. It's not complete yet. He's not done, but Jesus keeps giving us this invitation. Not only would you like to live in that reality someday, a world that's full of truth and beauty and goodness, where every single person operates every single day by the law of love, but why don't you just get in on it now? And I don't think we will necessarily meet the bar, probably in this lifetime, right? Like, we're always going to fall short of this vision that Jesus has given us. We're all going to have our days where it's like, I'm mad and I think I'm going to sit in it a while, you know? Or, I don't want to forgive him yet. Mm-hmm. Or, I think I just lusted, or whatever, because Jesus is going to talk about that next after Easter, so that's going to be fun, right? So whatever those things are, we fall short and we get into these situations, right, where we're like, I don't think I fully have it yet. Thank God he meets us in reality, right? Thank God he's still patient. He's still waiting for us to become. He's still there saying, if you want it, if you come back to what you really want, I'll be right here to help you get it and to transform you from the inside out. It is a high bar, Greg. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I think it's a worthy bar. I think for me, it's a matter of saying, if that's the thing that captures my imagination, if that's the world I'm looking forward to living in someday, am I feeling pulled toward that now? Why in the world would I wait if I could have part of that now? And if God could help deliver it to this world through me now, if I were to become an unstoppable source of his love, wouldn't that change things? I mean, that's why this is so much better news than checklists. Do's and don'ts, rules, Jeremiah talked about a moment ago. Here's what happens, friends. Jesus comes along and offers you the very best future, very best story right now you've ever imagined. And you know what we're endlessly good at? Turning it into religion. Yeah. We've been doing it now for more than 2,000 years.
For sure.
Let's just take this incredible vision, this opportunity to become human again, and to live in love with each other, with everybody, including our enemies. And why don't we just turn it into a bunch of rules and all that that, you know, we can judge everybody by, and we can feel really guilty about and have all those regrets that we sang about a few moments ago that we don't want anymore. Man, that will suck your soul dry. And it's nothing compared to this vision. So it feels like Jesus is setting a high bar, but remember, he's not moralizing here. He's not telling us this is how you should live, and if you don't, you're a loser. He's basically saying, what if? What if it could be like this? What if these are the people who actually have it all figured out? What if you could get in on that now? You want some of that? And so I think for me, it's rather than feeling defeated by it, if I can keep that perspective, I feel compelled by it. It's like, yes, it feels impossible, as you said. It feels unrealistic. But if I could just have a little bit more of it today, that would be a gift. If I have a little bit more of it tomorrow, that would be a gift. If I could become just a little more human again by next year this time, that would be worth it. And I truly don't know a more compelling way to live my one and only human life than that. And that's why we talk about it all the time and call you to it. That's why I think Jesus is calling us to it in the Sermon on the Mount, because it is that good.
Yeah, for sure. I think we covered all the questions. Was there any other questions that we didn't cover?
There was one person who said, what if, and I wanted to hit that real quickly. Somebody said, what if I'm not ready to stop being angry because the person I'm angry at is hurting children and there's no justice in it? And I was thinking about that in response to that answer I just gave a moment ago and say, when we struggle in real time with the not yet part of Jesus' vision, right? Like someday it'll be this way, but it's not yet. And right now I see it right in front of me. What do we do with that?
Woo.
Maybe I should sit on that end after 10:30. I think that's a fantastic question, and I just wanted to remind the person who asked that of a couple of things I think we said a couple of weeks ago. First of all, if you get angry at that kind of injustice, you should get angry at that kind of injustice. That's a tragic violation of what God's up to in the world. So when we see the places where it's not yet happening and this is hurting vulnerable people, our hearts ought to be the first ones in line to be broken over that. Amen?
Yeah.
And we ought to be there to say, what can I do to help bring justice to that situation, or how can I protect vulnerable people, that person or somebody else in a situation like that? How could we use our resources to help protect those people and advocate for them? I think that's part of following Jesus. But on the other hand, I have to be careful about what we said already. If my anger helps me notice something and care about it and move toward it, good. That's the appropriate job that anger does for us. If my anger is something I'm going to hold on to and cultivate, that's where we get in this danger of I'm not going to become human again.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, and I'll put it this way. If I violate that law of love in my own heart, I would propose I actually become less capable of doing the good in the world that would help fix the problem that I'm so angry about. See what I'm saying? Because I'm less a person of love because I'm letting this anger burn me up from the inside out. So I think it's a difficult line to walk. And I feel for whatever situation that person was describing when they asked that question, it's a difficult line to walk, but it's a worthy calling that we have to say, I can be angry about injustice and work on it, and I can be careful that the anger doesn't become who I am at the same time. I will become a person of love who can help with these things in the world, in real ways.
Yeah, that's good. Hard stuff. Because we all deal with this, but I'm thankful for the good news that you guys have shared this morning. And I just feel like this would be a good time to reflect and kind of go into a time of prayer. Jeremiah, would you lead us in that?
Yeah. Before you guys bow your heads, I had a conversation with somebody last week after one of our gatherings, and they said, I love that every week we get a chance to say, what does that mean for me now? And respond. That was such good news for me to hear that, because this is good news for all of us. And then we're invited into this way of living, and every time we should take a moment and go, what does that mean for me? How can I respond to that? What would that look like? And I think something Brian said when he's talking about Jesus is giving us this picture of what it looks like to live our human life, I think often we don't engage our imaginations enough.
So we see just what's here in front of us rather than seeing the things that are kind of unseen. And we know that there's two sides to that. There is the unseen. And part of it is taking a moment to grab a little imagination of, man, what could life look like? Like, not just what could life look like in describing that way. What would my life look like if I leaned into that? What would my relationships look like if I lived that? What would my parenting look like if I leaned into that imagination on a daily basis? What would my marriage look like if I begin to respond to that and begin to imagine and lean into this good thing that Jesus is asking? So that's kind of what I want to respond to. Let's just bow our heads, close our eyes for a moment. And maybe just ask your question, what would my life look like? Maybe just engage your imagination. And ask yourself this one question. Do I want that? The vision that Jesus talks about, the freedom that we can live in. And yes, we might have to walk through a little vulnerability and hurt. And forgiveness. And messy conversations. But the freedom of living the way Jesus calls us to live. And the effect of that it has in your life, starting, in those around you, and in those around them, which is this multiplied momentum of love and change in the world that can begin with you answering a question of what do I want and will I surrender to that? Father, thank you for the morning, for these incredibly good questions that I know as I hear each one of these questions, I immediately see areas in my life that each one of those questions apply to. And help me, Lord, to surrender to those, to your love and to your vision of how this could be lived out in your world. Help us to respond to that this week. And as we see injustice or we see hurt or we feel anger, what does that mean for me? And how can I respond to your good news and push back against that this week? We ask this in your name. Amen.